From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Following its approval by a congressional committee on Monday evening, the Democratic memo produced to rebut the Republican memo issued last Friday regarding the investigations into President Trump over Russiagate is in the president's hands. This was White House spokesperson Sarah Sanders on Tuesday at the Daily Presser at the White House.
The president has seen the memo. He met with the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, within the last hour to discuss some of the differences between the two memos. And we are undergoing the exact same process that we did with the previous memo, in which it will go through a full and thorough legal and national security review. We're in the middle of that process. When that's completed, the president will be given a thorough briefing on the findings of the different organizations and stakeholders that are involved, and we'll make a determination at that time.
Before the review concluded last time, the president had made it clear to lawmakers that he was inclined to release the Republican memo. Has he made any kind of similar comments to you guys about the Democratic memo?
The president made the comment that we're going to go through the same process that we went through the first time, and that'll take several days to complete as it did the first time, and we'll make a determination at that point. John?
Thanks a lot, Sarah. The president on the Republican memo says that it completely vindicates him. And this weekend we heard from Trey Gowdy, who is on the Intelligence Committee, who had a large part in writing that memo. In what way does the president believe that the Republican memo vindicates him?
Look, the president has consistently called the Russia investigation politically motivated witch hunt for the last year, and the memo clearly vindicates the president's position that there was political bias in this process. It's pretty simple.
U.S. Secretary of Defense James Mattis and Air Force General Paul Selva, who's vice chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, testified on Capitol Hill Tuesday before the House Armed Services Committee. The two laid out the Pentagon's 2018 National Defense Strategy and nuclear posture review. This was Secretary Mattis's opening statement to the committee.
I'm here at your invitation to testify on two subjects, the 2018 National Defense Strategy and the nuclear posture review, and I'm joined by the Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Selva. Even in the midst of our ongoing counterterrorism campaigns, my role is to keep the peace for one more year, one more month, one more day, giving Secretary Tillerson and our diplomats time to resolve crises through diplomatic channels. The Department of Defense does this by providing the Commander-in-Chief with military options that ensure our diplomats negotiate from a position of strength. Up front, I need to note 3 days from now, I will visit our nation's first Security Force Assistance Brigade in Fort Benning, Georgia, as they prepare to deploy to Afghanistan. To advance the security of our nation, these troops are putting themselves in harm's way, in effect signing a blank check payable to the American people with their lives. They do so despite Congress's abrogation of its constitutional responsibility to provide sufficient, stable funding. Our military has been operating under debilitating continuing resolutions for more than 1,000 days during the past decade. These men and women hold the line for America while lacking this most fundamental congressional support, a predictable budget. Congress rightfully mandated this national defense strategy, the first one in a decade, and then shut down the government the day of its release. Today, we are again operating under a disruptive continuing resolution. It is not lost on me that as I testify before you this morning, we are again on the verge of a government shutdown, or at best, another damaging continuing resolution. I regret that without sustained, predictable appropriations, my presence here today wastes your time, because no strategy can survive, as you pointed out, Chairman, without the funding necessary to resource it. Yet we all know that America can afford survival. Nations as different as China and Russia have chosen to be strategic competitors. They seek to create a world consistent with their authoritarian models and pursue veto power over other nations' economic, diplomatic, and security decisions. Rogue regimes like North Korea and Iran persist in taking outlaw actions that undermine and threaten regional and global stability. And despite our successes to date against ISIS physical caliphate, violent extremist organizations continue to sow hatred, incite violence, and murder innocents. Across the globe, democracies are taking notice. We recognize great power competition is once again a reality. We will continue to prosecute the campaign against terrorism by, with, and through our allies. But in our new defense strategy, great power competition, not terrorism, is now the primary focus of U.S. national security. Our military remains capable, but our competitive edge has eroded in every domain of warfare: air, land, sea, cyber, and space. Under frequent continuing resolutions and sequestered budget caps, our advantages continue to shrink. The combination of rapidly changing technology, the negative impact on military readiness resulting from the longest continuous stretch of combat in our nation's history, and insufficient funding have created an overstretched and under-resourced military. During last week's State of the Union address, President Trump said weakness is the surest path to conflict. To those who might suggest that we should accept a year-long continuing resolution, it would mean a return to a disastrous sequestration level of funding for the military. And in a world of wash and change and increasing threats, there is no room for complacency. History makes clear that no country has a preordained right to victory on the battlefield. Framed within President Trump's national security strategy and aligned with the Department of State, our 2018 National Defense Strategy provides clear strategic direction for America's military. A long-term strategic competition requires the seamless integration of multiple elements of national power: diplomacy, information, economics, finance, intelligence, law enforcement, and military. The Department's principal priorities are long-term strategic competitions with China and Russia. Given the magnitude of the threats they pose to U.S. security and prosperity today, Congress must commit to both an increased and sustained investment in our capabilities. Concurrently, the Department will sustain its efforts to deter and counter rogue regimes such as North Korea and Iran, defeat terrorist threats to the United States, and consolidate our gains in Iraq and Afghanistan while moving to a more resource-sustainable approach. More than any other nation, America can expand the competitive space. We can challenge our competitors where we possess advantages and they lack strength. To restore a competitive military edge, this defense strategy pursues three primary lines of effort: to build a more lethal force, to strengthen traditional alliances while building new partnerships, and reform the department's business practices for performance and affordability. Our first line of effort emphasizes that everything we do must contribute to the lethality of our military. In war, an enemy will attack a perceived weakness. Therefore, we cannot adopt a single preclusive form of warfare. Rather, we must be able to fight across the spectrum of combat. This means the size and composition of our force matters. The nation must field a sufficient, capable force to deter conflict. If deterrence fails, we must win. To defend our way of life, our military will embrace change while holding fast to traditional proven attributes that make us the most formidable force on any battlefield. Those who would threaten America's experiment in democracy must know, if you threaten us, it will be your longest and worst day. To implement this strategy, we will invest in key capabilities, recognizing we cannot expect success fighting tomorrow's conflicts with yesterday's weapons and equipment. Driven by this strategy, next week you will see in our FY19 budget investments the following: space and cyber, nuclear deterrent forces, missile defense, advanced autonomous systems, artificial intelligence, and professional military education to provide our high-quality troops what they need to win. We will prioritize rebuilding readiness while modernizing our existing force. We will also be changing our force's posture to prioritize readiness for warfighting and major combat, making us strategically predictable for our allies and operationally unpredictable for any adversary. Our second line of effort is to strengthen traditional alliances while building new partnerships. History is clear that nations with allies thrive. We inherited this approach to security and prosperity from the greatest generation, and it has served the United States well for 70 years. Working by, with, and through allies who carry their fair share is a source of strength. Since the costly victory in World War II, Americans have carried a disproportionate share of the global defense burden while others recovered. Today, the growing economic strength of allies and partners has enabled them to step up, as demonstrated by more than 70 nations and international organizations participating in the Defeat ISIS campaign, and again in the 40-some nations standing shoulder to shoulder in NATO's Resolute Support mission in Afghanistan. Most NATO allies are also increasing their defense budgets, giving credence to the value of democracies standing together. Our third line of effort serves as the foundation for our military's competitive edge, reforming the business practices of the department to provide both solvency and security, and thereby gaining full benefit from every dollar spent. Every day, we will earn the trust of Congress and the American people. We must be good stewards of the tax dollars entrusted to us. In this regard, we will deliver our department's full financial audit this year, because results and accountability matter. The first audit in DOD's history will reveal how we can be better stewards. The department is transitioning to a culture of performance and affordability that operates at the speed of relevance. We will prioritize speed of delivery, continuous adaptation, and frequent modular upgrades. With your critical support, we will shed outdated management and acquisition processes while adopting American industry's best practices. If current structures inhibit our pursuit of lethality, I expect my service secretaries and defense agency heads to consolidate, eliminate, and restructure to achieve the mission. One of the key elements of the 2018 National Defense Strategy is to ensure America's military provides a safe, secure, and effective nuclear deterrent. Last January, President Trump directed a nuclear posture review to ensure the United States nuclear deterrent is modern, robust, flexible, resilient, ready, and appropriately tailored to deter 21st century threats and reassure allies. I recently received a letter from senators concerned that the 2018 Nuclear Posture Review would undermine decades of U.S. leadership on efforts to reduce and eventually eliminate the existential threat posed by nuclear weapons. To the contrary, the 2018 Nuclear Posture Review reaffirms the mutually reinforcing role of nuclear deterrence in a complex and dynamic security environment, while underscoring continued U.S. commitment to nonproliferation, to counter nuclear terrorism, and to arms control. Specifically, the review reflects the Department of Defense's strategic priority to maintain a safe and effective nuclear deterrent that will successfully deter nuclear and non-nuclear strategic attacks, assure our allies and partners, respond effectively should deterrence fail, and hedge against future uncertainties and dangers. The United States remains committed to its global leadership role to reduce the number of nuclear weapons and to fulfill existing treaty and arms control obligations, leadership that has reduced our nuclear weapons stockpile by over 85% from its Cold War high. Yet we must recognize that deterrence and arms control can only be achieved with a credible capability. A review of the global nuclear situation is sobering. While Russia has reduced only the number of its accountable strategic nuclear force, as agreed upon in the New START Treaty, at the same time, Russia has been modernizing these weapons as well as other nuclear systems. Moscow advocates a theory of nuclear escalation for military conflict. China, too, is modernizing and expanding its already considerable nuclear forces, pursuing entirely new nuclear capabilities. It is also modernizing its conventional military to challenge U.S. military superiority. Despite universal condemnation in the United Nations, North Korea's nuclear provocations threaten regional and global peace, and Iran's nuclear ambitions remain an unresolved concern. Globally, nuclear terrorism remains a tangible threat. As Senator McCain said last week, since the end of the Cold War, we have let our nuclear capabilities atrophy under the false belief that the era of great power competition was over. As the new National Defense Strategy rightfully acknowledges, we now face the renewed threat of competition from Russia and China, and we cannot ignore their investments in nuclear weapons in addition to conventional forces. The 2018 Nuclear Posture Review reaffirms the findings of previous reviews that the nuclear triad, comprised of silo-based intercontinental ballistic missiles, bomber aircraft, and nuclear submarines, is the most strategically sound means of ensuring nuclear deterrence. To remain effective, however, we must recapitalize our Cold War legacy nuclear deterrent forces, continuing a modernization program initiated during the previous administration. To quote my predecessor, Secretary Carter, quote, "We have been in a nuclear arms race for two decades now, but the U.S. hasn't been running the race," unquote. And as you can see demonstrated in this chart over here in the corner of the room, that it that gives credence to my predecessor's observation, the nuclear delivery system development over the last 8 years shows numerous advances by Russia, by China, and by North Korea versus the near absence of such activity by the United States, with competitors and adversaries developing 34 new systems in that time as compared to only one for the U.S., the F-35 aircraft. Nuclear deterrence will continue to play a critical role in preventing nuclear attack and large-scale conventional warfare between nuclear-armed states for the foreseeable future. U.S. nuclear weapons assure and defend our allies against conventional and nuclear threats, furthering our non-proliferation goals and increasing global security. The National Defense Strategy and the Nuclear Posture Review align with the President's National Security Strategy, guiding all of our efforts. As I said earlier, no strategy can survive without the necessary stable, predictable funding. Failure to modernize our military risks leaving us with a force that could dominate the last war, but be irrelevant to tomorrow's security. We need Congress to lift the defense spending caps and support the budget for our military of $700 billion for this fiscal year and $716 billion for next fiscal year. Let me be clear, as hard as the last 16 years of war have been on our military, no enemy in the field has done as much to harm the readiness of the U.S. military than the combined impact of the Budget Control Act's defense spending caps, worsened by operating for 10 of the last 11 years under continuing resolutions of varied and unpredictable duration. The Budget Control Act was purposely designed to be so injurious that it would force Congress to pass necessary budgets. It was never intended to be the solution. For too long, we have asked our military to carry on stoically with a success at any cost attitude. Our troops work tirelessly to accomplish every mission with increasingly inadequate and misaligned resources simply because Congress has not maintained regular order. The fact that our volunteer military has performed so well is a credit to their dedication and professionalism. We expect the men and women of our military to be faithful in their service, even when going in harm's way. We must also remain faithful to them. Chairman, as you said in January, if Congress does not come together to find a way to fund this strategy, Secretary Mattis must explicitly inform Congress and the American people of the consequences of failure. The consequences of not providing a budget are clear. Even though we are protecting ongoing operations from continuing resolution disruptions, each increment of funding in support of our partners in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria requires a 15-day congressional notification. My commanders in the field write to me for help in getting timely and predictable funds for their efforts as they work to execute our strategy against the enemy in the field. Additionally, should we stumble into a year-long continuing resolution, your military will not be able to provide pay for our troops by the end of the fiscal year. We will not recruit the 15,000 Army soldiers and 4,000 Air Force airmen required to fill critical manning shortfalls. We will not maintain our ships at sea with the proper balance between operations and time in port for maintenance. We will ground aircraft due to a lack of maintenance and spare parts. We will deplete the ammunition, training, and manpower required to deter war and delay contracts for vital acquisition programs necessary to modernize the force. Further, I cannot overstate the impact to our troops' morale from all this uncertainty. Today, as I sit here, we are engaged in prudent planning in the Pentagon for another disruptive government shutdown. You know that I cannot care more about our country's defense than this Congress, for it is Congress alone which has the constitutional authority to raise and support armies and to provide and maintain a Navy. We need Congress back in the driver's seat, not in the spectator's seat of the Budget Control Act's indiscriminate and automatic cuts. I know that in time of a major war, Congress will provide our military with all it needs. But money at the time of crisis fails to deter war. And you know we would be at that point to have nothing, no time to prepare, as it takes months and years to produce the munitions, the training, and readiness required to fight well. To carry out the strategy you rightly directed we develop, we need you to pass a budget now. If we are to sustain our military's primacy, we need budget predictability. Congress must take action now to ensure our military's lethality is sufficient to defend our way of life, to preserve the promise of prosperity, and to pass on the freedoms we enjoy to the next generation. And I ask that you not let disagreements on domestic policy continue to hold our nation's defense hostage. General Selva will now discuss the military dimensions of the 2018 National Defense Strategy and our nuclear posture review. Thank you.
General Selva.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ranking Member Smith and distinguished members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to join Secretary Mattis to brief on the National Defense Strategy and the Nuclear Posture Review. General Dunford and I, along with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, fully support the strategies outlined in the National Defense Strategy and in the Nuclear Posture Review. Both documents are the product of significant consultation and collaboration between members of the Joint Staff and the OSD staff. The National Defense Strategy provides detailed defense policy guidance for military strategy, planning, and operations. Therefore, the Chairman's 2016 Classified National Military Strategy will require an update to maintain complete consistency with the National Defense Strategy and the President's National Security Strategy released in December. Immediately upon release of the National Defense Strategy published last month, General Dunford directed the Joint Staff to commence a revision of the National Military Strategy, and that process is now underway. Other subsequent guidance and plans will be revised in turn to support the lines of effort outlined in the National Defense Strategy and to operationalize the concept of dynamic force employment. Additionally, we have begun to review the Joint Staff's organization and processes to determine if we need to make adjustments to support the Chairman's global integrator responsibilities and to better position the Chairman to support the Secretary's decision-making processes. Refining the National Military Strategy and the Joint Staff's organization and processes are a step towards increasing the lethality and flexibility of the joint force in light of the reemergence of great power competitions. The Nuclear Posture Review also reflects the realities of today's security environment, as well as projecting the future environment and its potential impacts on U.S. nuclear weapons policy and strategy. More specifically, the Nuclear Posture Review paid particular attention to Russian, Chinese, and North Korean activities intended to develop, modernize, and expand their nuclear weapons capabilities and to integrate them into their military strategies and doctrine. The Nuclear Posture Review takes into account the potential for Iran to renew its pursuit of nuclear weapons and capability in the future. The review has determined that our strategy must be tailored to each of these potential adversaries to effectively communicate the costs of aggression And this tailored strategy approach requires that the United States maintain a flexible and credible mix of nuclear and conventional capabilities that can address a spectrum of adversaries and threats over a significant period of time. It should not be lost on this committee that the Nuclear Posture Review conducted its assessment across a 30-year swath of the future. The Nuclear Posture Review reaffirms the nation's nuclear triad as the bedrock of our ability to deter aggression, assure our allies, and hedge against an uncertain future. And as the Secretary has mentioned, it reaffirms the need to recapitalize each component of our legacy nuclear systems to ensure that our nuclear capabilities remain ready, secure, capable, and credible now and into the future. Two supplemental capabilities recommended in the Nuclear Posture Review, the Nuclear Armed Sea Launch Cruise Missile and a modification of a small number of existing submarine launch ballistic missile warheads, would enhance deterrence by ensuring that no adversary, under any set of circumstances, can perceive an advantage through the use of a limited nuclear escalation or other strategic attack. Fielding these capabilities will not lower the threshold at which the U.S. would employ nuclear weapons. Rather, it will raise the nuclear threshold for potential adversaries, making the use of nuclear weapons less likely. Nuclear weapons pose the only existential military threat to our nation. Therefore, there is no higher priority for the joint force than fielding all of the components of an effective nuclear deterrent to deter potential adversaries from nuclear attack on any scale. It is important to note that the National Defense Strategy and the Nuclear Posture Review both make the assumption that the military will receive timely, predictable, and sufficient funding to execute these strategies. As General Mattis has emphasized, we in uniform appreciate the support of this committee and the Congress, and we trust that the Congress will provide the funding needed to turn these strategies into reality.
Meanwhile, a new Pentagon public relations campaign, which targets American taxpayers with their own money, was announced by the State Department Tuesday. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert described the program at her daily press conference Tuesday.
The DOD's campaign called This Is Your Military. It's a new DOD initiative aimed at connecting the American public with the military by showing them a unique view into the lives of those who are currently serving our country. We will highlight the hard work of the 7,000 veterans who currently are employed by the Department of State. The initiative will focus on our Marine security guards who protect our embassies worldwide, the National Guard and the reservists, and the approximately 7,000 veterans that the State Department employs around the world. DOD will produce videos to be released as part of an initiative that showcases the National Guard, reservists, veteran success stories who work with the Department of State.
Nauert then introduced Amber Smith, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Outreach, to provide additional details.
Today, fewer Americans have a direct connection to those who serve in the military. Research shows that the civ-military divide is continuing to expand, which threatens the viability and the sustainability of the all-volunteer force, which poses some long-term national security risks. This Is Your Military is a Department of Defense outreach initiative that will educate and inform the American public while introducing them, the less than 1% of Americans who are currently serving in the military, to the 99% who are not. We also want to show how the military is relevant to Americans in their daily lives and for future generations, as well as how we are a force for good. We look forward to collaborating with the Department of State by highlighting the Marine security guards that protect our embassies worldwide, the National Guard, the reservists, and the nearly 7,000 veterans that the department employs around the world who are all a part of the This Is Your Military story. The initiative will showcase the real lives of those who are serving in the military and correct common misperceptions that exist today. We will encourage Americans to learn about the military's missions, our capabilities, who is serving, and why they serve. Each month, we'll focus on specific themes. We will release 10 to 15 videos per month on social media that give a behind-the-scenes look into military life. We will have increased coverage of live events as they relate to the military, and we'll collaborate with our external partners to reach an audience that is not normally connected to the military.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.